You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McColl. Advertising is a mugs game, and telcos are the biggest mugs of all, followed closely by car sales and real estate. I know that's a generalisation, but last week saw Australia's consumer watchdog crack down on advertisements which mislead and confuse consumers. It's about time the regulators change the way advertisers dish up prices to consumers in this country. Obviously, advertisers want us to buy. That's why they do what they do. But why not tell consumers the total cost of a purchase? Take motor vehicles, for example. $29,990 plus dealer delivery and government statutory charges? That can add up to thousands on the total purchase price. You could rephrase it as $1,000 for the tyres, plus car, plus dealer delivery and government statutory charges. I know, it's a bit silly, but it emphasises component pricing, something rampant in real estate and motor vehicle advertising. The ACCC recently clamped down on this sort of behaviour in the telecommunications sector, so now they're moving on to other industries. On May the 25th, the law in Australia changed. So what do these new laws require? Well, in short, where a corporation makes a price representation to consumers, it may only use a component price, that's a part of the total price, if it predominantly specifies the single total price payable for the goods or services, where a single figure price is quantifiable. Let's see what happens now. Next, the ACCC should target those infuriating cashback deals. They're on the rise at the moment and a complete pain in the you-know-what. Consumers have to jump through hoops and wait months to receive their offers. And why? Why don't they just discount the product at the point of sale? Laptops, PCs and software sales seem to be at the top of the cashback pile at the moment. What purpose does it serve to either the manufacturer, distributor, reseller or consumer? None that I can see. So as the ACCC closes one door, another opens.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner looks at HTC's new offering here in Australia. ACMA closes offices in Perth and Adelaide. Illegal downloads go through the roof. Bing and Wave are about to open. And Google's new algorithm spots quitters before they resign. First up, though, here's the latest happenings in the world of technology for this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, cyber criminals cash in on the swine flu pandemic. The former Telstra CEO launches a broadside at racist Australians. Microsoft and Google consider changes to US taxation laws. And the International Space Station gets that little bit more homely. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Internet security experts have warned that credit card fraudsters and purveyors of dodgy pharmaceuticals are cashing in on worldwide H1N1 swine flu hysteria. A list of 146 swine flu-related internet sites has been compiled by security firm F-Secure. These sites have all been registered in the last few weeks and attempt to collect donations from well-intentioned web surfers. The sites also distribute malware, fake pills, and bogus swine flu survival guides. Internet security company McAfee said that the main registrations, which included the word swine, had increased 30-fold in the last few weeks, while one of the new sites, noswineflu.com, offered a dodgy swine flu prevention guide for $20. McAfee and Symantec have both observed an increase in swine flu spam, touting bogus pills which claimed to eradicate the flu. Victims' credit card details are being harvested when they try to buy the bogus products. Cisco Ironport, an email and web security organisation, estimates that swine flu-related messages already account for up to 4% of the world's email. The warnings from internet security experts come as Australia ramps up its response to the crisis. The federal government last week ordered 10 million doses of a vaccine being developed to fight the H1N1 virus. There are now more than 100 confirmed cases of human swine flu in Australia. Former Telstra CEO Mr. Sol Trujillo has described Australians as racist and described the country as technologically backward, saying that doing business in Australia was like stepping back in time. Speaking to a BBC reporter last week, Mr. Trujillo was asked about Australians' attitudes towards his Hispanic heritage and if he thought the Prime Minister's parting words of adios were offensive.
The world is full of a lot of people, and most economies have to take advantage, including Australia, of a diverse set of people. And if there's a belief that only certain people are acceptable versus others, that is a sad state.
Industry analysts, unions, and even the Prime Minister are among those dismissing Mr. Trujillo's comments as a case of sour grapes. Mr. Mark McDonnell, a telecommunications industry analyst at BBY, spoke on government radio last week. He said that references to Mr. Trujillo as the Mexican bandit and his associates as the Three Amigos were all well-intentioned.
I think there was an element of jocularity about that. I don't think there was anything demeaning or malicious intended by it. Certainly in my experience in dealing with him, he was always afforded a tremendous amount of courtesy and respect.
A spokeswoman for the Prime Minister, Mr. Kevin Rudd, described Mr. Trujillo's comments as ridiculous, while the federal opposition weighed into the fray, with Senator Nick Minchin describing the PM's comments as unbecoming of an Australian Prime Minister and very disappointing. An announcement by the US President Barack Obama calling for a new law to close existing tax loopholes by 2011 could impact on internet heavyweights like Google and Microsoft, who move revenue offshore to overseas subsidiaries. Google has recently come under pressure in Britain after a newspaper revealed the search giant was paying only £600,000 in tax, despite local revenues of £1.2 billion. Under Australian tax laws, Google is able to send hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue from its Australian business to an overseas subsidiary, where in Ireland, for example, the corporation tax rate of 12.5% is considerably lower than the thresholds of over 30% in the US and Australia. This simple transfer pricing arrangement has allowed Google to claim its Australian revenues are $90 million, when the real figure is much, much higher. While the US Congress debates the bill, considerable pressure is being imposed by lobbying campaigns supported by over 200 firms, including Oracle Corporation, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, and General Electric. In an article published by The Age Tech last week, it was revealed that subsidiaries in Ireland are also used by Yahoo Search Marketing and Microsoft, and that Google Ireland is owned by entities based in the tax haven of Bermuda. The Australian Taxation Office declined an opportunity to comment on the report, as did all of the companies involved. And a Russian Soyuz spacecraft has embarked on a historic mission to the International Space Station. The addition of three cosmonauts to the ISS crew complement will allow for more scientific research by doubling the number on board. Professor Henry Hertzfeld from the Space Policy Institute at George Washington University spoke on government radio last week and said that the crew increase is both historic and welcome.
The station was designed to have six people. We haven't been able to do that up to now.
Why hasn't that been the case until now, that it has been running on three as opposed to six?
Lots of reasons. Access, money, construction not complete, etc.
The doubling of the ISS crew also means that each of the station's international partners, the United States, Russia, Europe, Japan and Canada, will each have a representative on board at the same time. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Hey, Dr. Ron, we got a real doctor coming in tonight.
Yeah, whatever.
They do training, which is good. And I know Comp Now, who are up the street, are doing the same thing in retaliation.
And what they're thinking of doing is putting pictures on the screen, and you have to turn them the right way up.
You might still pay a company to provide you with a distribution that's supported.
Hasn't made a cracker on it.
We have demonstrated proof of principle experiments that we could record 1.6 terabytes per disk.
I'm not convinced of using the phone as a navigation device while I'm driving.
Tried using a Melways while you're driving?
Google Docs feels like it's still in beta, though. It's not a polished product.
Probably going to be an 8-gig model, much the same as we've got now for the budget conscious.
Oh, it's not English.
You can't translate it directly, I don't think.
Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Yeah, it's English. That's what Graham just said there. So.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, welcome to the panel. I'm Andrew McComb. Welcome, everybody. Dr. Ron, JD, Graham, all in this evening. How are you all?
We're very well. We're very well.
It's going to be an interesting show tonight after last week. Oh, I'm still, how's your nanotechnology going? Have you contemplated building any more very small 10 to the 17th?
I listened back to the interview that we did with Dr. Chon. It was very, very interesting.
Yeah, I learnt a lot.
He's a really clever man. They're doing some great things there at Swinburne.
If you missed it, we were talking about how they can get amazing amounts of data onto one single sort of CD-sized
DVD
platter-y thing, which was amazing. Absolutely.
So using nano-sized rods of gold and recording.
Made in the chemistry lab too, which I thought it came out of the ground.
Grown in a bucket. I think it must have come out of the ground originally at some stage before it got dissolved in whatever's in the bucket.
Absolutely.
And data recorded in five dimensions.
Five dimensions.
JD. I was going to say my son started growing crystals in a little cup at home the other day.
Well, it inspired him, did it?
Yes, or anyway. So, well worth going back to last week's show in the archives at www.techtalkradio.com.au to have a listen to that one.
Absolutely. Anyway, welcome aboard wherever you might happen to be listening, whether you're here in Melbourne listening to us on 3WBC, or if you're listening to us in New Zealand live on Magic over there, welcome, or on the pod, or in Cairns, or in Brisbane, or wherever we go. WA, we're everywhere. A bit like a rash at the moment, aren't we?
We are like a bad rash. We're also broadcasting on Ustream, so you can watch us and listen to us if you'd like to.
Ustream.
We've got set up in record time today.
No, we've been in here since about 11 a.m. ustream.tv/TechTalkRadioAU and follow the prompts to the click on the go to show page link, and that will take you there.
Very good. Now, also tonight on Tech Talk Radio, did you know that ACMA's closing a couple of offices, some satellite offices?
Yes, in the interests of customer service, perhaps.
I think the global financial...
The company that makes the anvils and things.
No, ACMA.
Oh.
You've been watching too many Looney Tunes, haven't you there, Dr. Graham? The Australian Australian Communications and Media Authority, those in charge of licensing and anything to do with radio.
Telephones?
And telephones, yes. We're going to be talking to Rob Broomhead from the WIA about all things ACMA-ish and whatever else is happening in the wonderful land of amateur radio at the moment. It's a hobby that's growing in popularity like you wouldn't believe. So that's also on tonight's show.
Very cool.
Let's start off. Dr. Ron, I'm going to ask you the question which I haven't asked you before. Any correspondence which needs to be entered into?
I've got a very, very quick hello to Tommy21. Now, Tommy21 is a new forum user. If you're not subscribed to the forum, you need to be. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au. You can read the show notes from previous episodes, and you can participate in discussions online during the week.
Yeah, the podcasts were obviously named in the right order this week, so as a result, there was no correspondence of people saying, what are you doing to my downloads?
Certainly, the number of emails dropped off, didn't they?
They did.
It was quite funny.
Amazingly. So, but then again, I have changed the mail server for Tech Talk Radio because the spam is just out of control. How many Commonwealth Bank spams are you getting a day?
I've got none.
Really?
Yep.
Lots.
Lots. They come in the hourly batch at the moment. They come in droves. Like, that's like you get nothing for 50 minutes and all of a sudden, bang, 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 you'll get about three or four of them in a row.
I'm using Spam Assassin combined with Gmail's anti-spam product, and it's pretty good.
Well, there you go.
And I'm using the time-honored technique of not going to the office and not reading my emails.
Well, that's nothing new, is it, for you, Graham, is it? As Dr. Ron shakes his head. it's out there. I can't believe the amount of spams that are out there, and they're all coming in all sorts of traditional spammy looks. At the moment, they're doing the click here and we open the HTML email thing, so obviously they're phishing as much as they can. I don't know why they're targeting that one bank in particular, but just be wary of all those nasty things, because you won't get emails from a bank. You have to go and log into NetBank if you're a Commonwealth Bank customer, and you find all the information within your logon. So don't click anything.
I've got a very quick story for you. My mum got a nasty malware infection a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Along the similar lines, she stumbled across a website and something popped up that alerted her bogusly, and it said, your computer has been infected and you need to click here to disinfect it.
I've seen that one, and I'm a Mac user, and it says download this Windows application now.
See, they're not discriminating, are they? They'll go anyone.
Hopefully that didn't fool you, JD, but unfortunately she installed some malware on her system which is called Internet Security 2009, I think that was the name of it.
I've seen that one before.
Oh, it's insidious, Graham.
Yes.
It took me
happened? You had to reformat the drive and start again?
No, I was able to clean it. I was able to use some utilities to clean it up, but it disabled all of the anti-spyware and anti-virus programs.
Yep.
I tried to remove it by starting the computer in safe mode and going to add remove programs and uninstalling it, but it blocked all of the uninstall routines in Windows. It's insidious.
Yes.
Very, very annoying.
Is it popular? Or should I say, is it out there? Is there lots of it?
There's lots of it. And fortunately, there's a lot of help if you get infected with one of these sorts of applications.
So this is what they call malware, and it's designed to get in there and capture keystrokes and send it back to the mothership or something, isn't it?
What this one was designed to do was it throws up all these warnings. It's a real application, and it looks very, very convincing. It says that your computer is infected, and it then says, your current internet security product is out of date. You need to go to this website, enter in your credit card details to renew your internet security subscription,
that's what they want. We will
clean your computer. So they're relying on you to follow that link, go to a website, put your credit card details in. Fortunately, my mum thought, no, that's a bit strange. I'm not going to do that.
Gut instinct kicked
in. I'm going to ring young Dr. Ron and ask him.
It's good when you've got a son who knows these things. Don't hesitate.
It's good with a mum that was also able to identify, hang on a minute, this is going too far. Let's stop here and get some expert advice. So.
But that's good. Common sense prevailed, really, didn't it? The instinct was there. Don't quite feel this is not comfortable. Good, so stop and ring someone who knows.
That's the trick.
Mm. And what was the upshot? So how many hours of cleansing?
It didn't take me too long. It was about half an hour, 40 minutes, and it's clean again.
Oh, that wasn't too bad.
And I told her, never click on that link again, whatever link it was.
Very good. Also, on tonight's show, Bing. Not Crosby, but Bing.
Bada bing, bada
Microsoft
boom.
Microsoft Bing, we're going to be talking about that. Also, Google's wave. Very cryptic night tonight, isn't it? Google's having a big wave. Did you know, by the way, Lars, who's the developer of Wave, that all came out of Sydney? It's an Australian product, like Google Maps came out of Sydney.
Okay.
There you go. So technology and the people are here to develop these sort of technologies. Mm. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. I think Adam caught up with him up in Sydney. And we do have a view from the couch this evening. And Dr. Ron, you need to listen up to the view tonight because it's all about your droid.
Yeah, it's being superseded.
Well,
is it right?
There's
going to be a version 2.
1.5, isn't it? But anyway, there'll be another version. Yes, you're right.
Are you talking about the handset or the operating system on
I was talking about the operating system. Is there a new handset? Oh, no.
Well, we spoke about the Magic a couple of...
The nice rounded version of yours.
Yes, last week or a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Mm. So, lots to talk about on tonight's show. Now, let's start off with Sol Trujillo. Do you remember him? Or is he a dim, dark, distant memory and he's a bit like a nightmare?
It's a nightmare that everyone's moved on.
Well, anyway, Sol Trujillo's a few parting comments from far away because he left the company early. He was supposed to be there until the end of this month. Happy winter, by the way. So the end of the financial year, which is 30 days away, he was supposed to be there here until then.
Mm.
But they basically said, no, that's fine. Wherever you are, you stay there. Don't come back. So anyway, I think he was in Mexico or something like that. And some people were talking about correlations between being in Mexico, the swine flu, and Sol Trujillo. But anyway, he did get his nose out of joint brought up a lot of alleged comments about people not being, being racist and not being able to do business fairly. And it all started off with our Prime Minister, Mr. Crudd, who's currently got his discount sale on the moment.
It's K. Rudd. There's a space there.
Oh, is it?
Misread that.
Anyway, this is what our Prime Minister sort of said when he was told that the parting of the ways was imminent with Sol Trujillo.
Adios.
Well, will people be...
Adios.
Adios. You know?
And apparently that, according to others, is not on. But anyway, I'll let everybody else be the judge. Do you think that's offensive from an Australian? I think a lot of people have underestimated Australia's sense of humour. Because we've got a sense of humour here like no other, wouldn't you say?
I think so. We've got a very particular sense of humour, which is often lost on people from other parts of the world.
Yeah.
We don't take anything too seriously, do we?
Nah.
Then again, people from other parts of the world, sometimes their humour is lost on us.
Well, this is true. This is true.
Yes. So,
but you would have thought that Sol was fairly attuned to our way of speaking and our idiosyncrasies and our mannerisms, spent so much time here and...
Well,
invested so much time and effort.
Did he?
In the Australian
4 years
telco.
Is all he came here and spent, or 3 years and 11 months, to be precise.
You'd think he would have immersed himself in the culture and an Australiana a little bit more
Not quite sure that that's the culture that he immersed himself in.
Well, no. Apparently not.
No.
Well, he brought his friends over and they all said, see ya. We're going back a bit early.
He was basically the last to leave. He brought his friends and some culture with him. Is that what? Yes, rather than immersing himself by...
It's like when Captain Cook landed in Australia and planted European trees, really, wasn't it? Anyway. This is what he had to say to the BBC in relation to what he thought of Australia.
You know, many Australians have come up to me and they've apologized because they're embarrassed by that kind of behavior.
Because I noticed reading the papers there that when you were referred to, they would always point out that you had a Hispanic background or whatever. In other words, in Britain and in America, it would have been neither here nor there. In Australia, it was invariably pointed out. And the Prime Minister, when asked what his parting words to you would be, said, adios. Was that racism?
I think, by definition, there were even columnists that wrote stories that said it was. But, you know, my point is that, you know, that does exist. And it's got to change because the world is full of a lot of people. And most economies have to take advantage, including Australia, of a diverse set of people. And if there's a belief that only certain people are acceptable versus others, that is a sad state. Well, I would say that Australia definitely is different than the U.S. You know, in many ways, it's like stepping back in time, just simply because of some of the policies, some of the laws that, you know, are more recent. So if you think about, you know, the immigration policies that weren't changed till about 30 years ago or so, which were very restrictive. If you think about privatization of companies, you know, that's only 10 or 15 years old, in terms of what most people would call a developed economy. And essentially, you know, the isolation of the country by virtue of distance, you know, there's a lot of considerations there that say it's a much different operating climate, environment than most other countries.
Do you think there's racism there?
Well, I think it was evidenced in a lot of ways there, you know, with me personally, but more importantly with others. As you look at some of the events that have occurred over the last 5 or 10 years, some of them before I was there, some while I was there, but I'm sure that, you know, that will continue because of, you know, what I would call the evolution and the maturation of a country.
Well, there you go. This Sol's parting words. Now you've heard it. Untarnished and in its true form. Anyway, thanks, Sol. It's been a great 4 years, and maybe it's just time to move on.
Yeah,
and see what happens with the...
Sayonara, perhaps.
Yeah, that's the one, isn't it, JD? All right. Now, Google, the juggernaut from that calls... Mountain View in California,
yep,
home.
Heard of them?
Have you?
Yep.
That's good. they've launched a new product which you've probably heard of. It's called Google Wave. What do you know about it?
I've heard about it. I know nothing about it. I've had my head in the sand for the last few days. Tell me about Google Wave.
Well, Google Wave is a collaborative email type sort of system.
Oh,
now,
this. Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah, yeah,
did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. It's going to blow us all out of the water, apparently.
Well, I've seen the demo, and it's very good.
Is it?
It is very good, but that's just the demo. You know what it's like. You can build these things, and they're fantastic in the lab, but when you have to wait until they come out into the real world before you actually can evaluate them properly. Anyway... Lars is one of the engineers behind Wave, who's based out of Google in Sydney. They've got a lovely new palatial office up there too. I don't know whether you've seen it. I think I tweeted a link about it before, so go and click the link. But this is Lars over a video conference that Adam got for us while he was up in Sydney last week, telling us I think Adam at the time asked him for 140 characters or less, which got a good laugh in the audience. But this is Lars, I think in about 60 seconds, giving us a bit of an insight into what Wave is.
Terrific.
So Google Wave is a new communication and collaborations tool. We're starting a developer preview today. It's launching later in the year. It's a new type of communication. Waves are equal parts conversation and documents. You can use them for a great many different communication and collaboration tasks, like email-type conversations or instant messaging-type conversations. You can share photos, you can share maps, you can collaboratively edit documents in it, and I highly recommend going to wave.google.com and get some popcorn and check out our video there.
So, if that makes any sense, it's using email as the underlying technology, but it's not email as such. It's collaborative email. And, yeah, it's one of those things where if you go and have a look at the site that he just mentioned, wave.google.com, you can actually see a little bit of it. So it will be interesting to see what comes of it. But what do you think, Dr. Ron? Could this be something – I know you're very anti-spam, and I know that you've always said that spam needs to change. Maybe this could be what it needs.
Yeah, email needs to change, doesn't it? The way we communicate needs to change online. if this means the end of spam and enable, well, it's not going to mean the end of spam, is it? That's a silly thing to say. Well, if it means that spam can be more, means that spam can be more manageable for people, I suppose.
If you've got a corporation in charge of mailing, then potentially you've got some form of control over it. Anyway, Lars also did a piece to the developers and trying to get people to actually start building applications for it. It's not unlike what Google Earth is, where they had mashups. You could use the underlying, you know, map technology and put your own pins and put your own overlays and things like that on it. They're trying to encourage developers to do the same, so that when it launches, when Wave launches later in the year, hopefully there'll be some good applications and some good third-party apps that you'll be able to use on it as well. Here's just a little bit from that conference, which hopefully will give you a little bit more of an insight into what Wave is all about.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to show a demo today of a product that we've been working on for a couple of years down in Sydney, Australia. It's called Google Wave, and it's a communication and collaborations tool that we're launching later in the year. Email today is by far the most popular way for us to communicate on the internet, which is remarkable, because email was invented more than 40 years ago, before the internet, before the web. And it was done without the experience of things like SMS and instant messaging and blogs and wikis and bulletin boards and discussion groups and social networks and wikis and media sharing sites and collaborative editors, all of these different kinds of communication that we take for granted today. Also, of course, computers and networks have dramatically improved in those four decades. And so when we started this project, and it's been more than 2 years, we asked ourselves the question, what might email look like if it was invented today? And needless to say, there's about a million different ways you can answer that question. What you're going to see today, Google Wave, is our attempt. Email essentially mimics snail mail. The basic metaphor is you write a message and you send it to one or more recipients. Wave, by contrast, starts out with the definition of a conversation, which is simply a lightweight tree structure of messages and a set of users participating in that conversation. And then instead of thinking of individual messages as being sent back and forth, we think of the entire conversation object as being a shared object hosted on a server somewhere. And users that participate can open up that wave, leave their replies, go away, and then when the next user comes, she can open up that same shared object, see those replies, and add her own. That's how the wave grows, that's how the conversation builds up, and you'll recognize that this is a model akin to how bulletin boards work. We found that with a tight enough implementation, you can use that to build a single communication tool that has functionality spanning quite a lot further than what you can do with email today.
So there you go. That's Lars telling us a little bit about it. Now, to sum it all up, it's low down. It changes the game about what it means to communicate and collaborate online. It blurs lines between email, wiki, instant messaging, and all types of presence type sort of applications, yep, real time sort of things.
Yep.
Should also work quite well over mobile, which is another plus for it, but such a fragmented change to how people work with each other will take some time to digest, which I think is going to be, like with all new technologies, it takes a while to, because we're moving away from, well, not that you're moving away, but I think it'll supplement email for some time, but it could be a good way to collaborate online, don't you think?
It could be. People who are Microsoft users and have used Microsoft Outlook in an Exchange environment, in a corporate environment, they've always had good and very tight collaboration with mail, calendar, contacts, shared journals. But it's something that's always been lacking. A product as polished as that has always been lacking in an internet environment. Graham, you're about to say something. You're not about to say something.
No, I'm sorry.
So if this
haven't got my head around what this is, I'm afraid.
Yeah, if this is a similar sort of environment where you can collaborate tightly with other people and you can do it on the internet, and what's more, it's made available to you completely free in the same way that Gmail and Google Calendar is.
Like through Gmail, yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of thing. I reckon it's great. It'll be good. I'll definitely enjoy trying it out, putting it through the hoops.
Graham, if you're perplexed, go and have a look at the Wave website, wave.google.com, in your own time. Probably not now, because it takes a bit, because there's a demo there, and it's quite interesting, and it should give you an understanding of what they're trying to achieve.
I'll have a look at that later on.
So, anyway.
It makes me wonder. I mean, yeah, blurring the line between email and instant messaging. Instant messaging and email are different for a reason. We use them for different things. So I'm not sure why you'd want to have
and have a look and
combination
see.
Combination of the two.
But if you have a homepage that when you open up a web browser, Graham, you've got everything in front of you there, is that something that you would find useful? You've got instant messaging which updates in real time on one side of the screen. You've got another pane where you can look at all your mail. You've got another small pane on one side where you can look at an RSS feed, for example. Is that something that you would find useful, do you think?
Don't know. I'll have a look.
But you've got to take into consideration, too, that everybody likes their information here and now. Take Twitter, for example, you know, how that's taken off. And that's as-it-happens type sort of technology.
Mm.
And to marry that with email and collaborative work, if you're working on a project together or communicating with a group of people, then maybe it's got room. Maybe there's a little space for it out there in our internet land for it.
I think you're right. I haven't seen the demos, so I'm speculating a fair bit. But from his description in that little piece, it sounds a little bit like a web forum and a wiki where you're developing a page or some information together, but it gives you an opportunity, if you're all live, to have a bit of a chat about what you're doing at the time. And if you're not live, obviously you can post a comment about it. And then the wiki page, if you like, is the backbone of the collaboration. So it sounds like they're just merging all of the technologies into one hub, which sounds really good.
Pretty much the case. The scary thing, which I thought was pretty amazing when I was watching it, was the fact that as one person types on one screen, it's actually coming up in real time on the other people's screens, not just yours, whoever's logged in, whoever's online at the time. So it's got potential. All right, that's Google Wave coming to a web browser probably near you.
Now, where can we find that if we want to try it out or have a look? Is it wave.google.com? Righto, good.
All right, we're going to take a break fairly shortly, but before we do that, ASIO, you know them.
Oh, yes.
Apart from the fact that they're following Adam Turner on Twitter, which is interesting.
Run and hide, Adam.
Did you know that they actually have, they bug 3,000 calls a year?
Yeah.
Does that surprise you?
No. Only 3,000?
No.
Yeah, apparently it's for quality assurance and training purposes.
That's very good. For homegrown terrorists.
Absolutely.
Often,
yeah. But Australian authorities, including the spy agency ASIO, are bugging the telephone of Australian citizens at a rate of more than 20 times their US counterparts. Maybe the laws you make it easier to get a court order or something to actually tap someone's phone. But figure cited in the federal parliamentary estimates hearing last week revealed that about 3,000 Australians had their phone calls intercepted every year.
Hmm.
That's a lot of people, isn't it? If you think about our population is considerably less than that of the United States, yet we have more phone taps. Does that mean we're dodgier?
No, it could mean that we're more proactive. It could mean that we're a bit more conchy about monitoring the conversations. They have to actually...
Perhaps they're just curious to find out what's going on.
No,
perhaps
they might be.
Interesting private lives and they're wanting to find out what people are talking about.
Maybe they're doing their job, Graham.
Oh, you think so?
I think so. They have to go through an independent... they'd have to take an independent sort of... have independent oversight in terms of obtaining warrants to do that sort of thing. I would imagine they'd have to go to a court and get some sort of court order to do it. It's not something that
3,000 bad guys they were listening to. Is that
well? They're not going to randomly just select people and listen to their phone conversations.
Does that mean we have more bad guys in the US?
Well, that was where I was alluding to too, JD. Mm.
How many is it? 3,000 a year.
3,000 a year.
What, out of 20 million people?
Yeah. But if that's put into perspective, if that's more than the US, obviously the US don't do their gig probably. Or maybe it's just too hard with their technology. I don't know.
We'd have to look at the figures side by side because they're comparing ASIO with just one agency in the US, whereas there could be like 50 agencies in the US that do that. So maybe the figures don't add up. I don't know.
Mm, okay, absolutely. Now, in other interesting news this week, illegal downloads, peer-to-peer stuff, is soaring at the moment because of the hard times, allegedly. Hundreds of thousands more of Australians have turned to illegal download sites in the past year to save money on movies. Don't know how that works, but nonetheless... Mm. The video libraries are pretty good, I would have thought, these days. But total visits by Australians to BitTorrent websites, including Mininova, The Pirate Bay, ISO Hunt, Torrent Reactor, and Torrens, grew from 785,000 in April last year to 1.049 million in April this year. And now that's according to Nelson, who do the ratings for TV and all that sort of stuff. Does that surprise anybody, or is television really that bad in Australia?
Television is that bad in Australia. And I wonder whether that's got as much to do with it as the economic times have.
Come on, Andrew, you make the stuff. Would you rather watch something that you churned out at the office, or would you rather watch a movie?
No, watching stuff I churn out at the office, like watching a home movie anyway. So. Well, I think, haven't we all taken to the cinemas recently? You know, a lot of people, I think, prefer a night out and watch a movie at a cinema and make a night of it than sit in front of a box and watch a downloaded sort of program. But
but if you want to watch the latest episode of NCIS, then maybe you're going to download it rather than wait for Channel 10 to get their act together.
Yes. Any of the networks, for that matter. Mm. Really? Don't you?
Yeah, I'm not singling out Channel 10.
But then you have...
equally as bad.
But do you get commercials in those, the ones you download? I don't.
No.
No? Oh, well, there you go. That's the reason. 5 minutes of program, 5 minutes of commercial. People don't want that anymore. And the quality. What's the quality like these days? Says he who hasn't downloaded any for some time.
Variable, but you can get good quality ones if you want to, yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Variable. You don't know quite what you're going to get.
Well, yeah, no, often you do.
Do you?
Well, yeah, if you've been out there and you know what's where, then yes, you know what quality you're going to get. You can be fairly reliable about that.
Mm, okay. I wouldn't know about that. Anyway. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a bit of a view from the couch, and then we're going to talk about Bing, and we're also going to talk about ACMA and all sorts of things. So stick around.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
Like my old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, that's impressive.
I smoke. That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
Did you know that whenever Tech Talk Radio is live to air, you can chat with the panel in real time? It's marvellous, this internet thingy. So wherever you are, anywhere in the world, you can be a part of Australia's premier technology show. You don't even have to register. Just log on to chat.techtalkradio.com.au and add your voice to the growing number of interactive Tech Talk listeners. It's a great way to ask a question to a guest or to the panel. Come on, join the fun. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Dr. Ron, how's your Android-based phone, HTC phone?
It's going well. It's going well. I just did a quick check of the operating system in the break with JD here.
Yep.
It says that I'm up to date with my operating system. We're looking to see if it might have done an
is
online
it out of beta yet?
Update. No new OS for you.
It's a Google product. Is it out of beta yet?
Yeah, it is out of beta.
Because Gmail's still in beta, and we've had that for 7 years now, or 8 years now.
Gmail's an interesting case in point, but no, the Android operating system is out of beta. It's a good version 1.something, definitely. Mm. Yeah, I'll tell you in just a few moments.
All right. The good news is that Adam made the trek to Sydney last week on your behalf, I believe, because he wanted to go out and I know Dr. Ron's got problems with his phone. It's well, not that he got problems with it, but you were disappointed in certain areas. You thought the battery life might be a little bit better, and how come it took so long for Google Maps and things like that to come out? But
correct.
So he did actually take to the skies and flew up to Sydney for the day, and amongst other things, he had a chat to find out what the latest offerings are for your particular device.
Oh, thanks, Adam.
It was very nice of him, I thought.
Very kind.
So if you're thinking about getting one of these little devices, then potentially have a bit of a listen up, and you'll hear what Adam's view from the couch is this week, all about the HTC Magic and a new version of software too. Okay, we've taken the view from the couch to Sydney again this week, and I'm talking to Anthony Petz, who's the Sales and Marketing Director for HTC in Australia and New Zealand. Anthony, welcome to Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Adam.
Now, we're here today at the launch of the HTC Magic, which is the new HTC Google phone. Anthony, do you want to start off by telling us a bit about the differences between the first generation, the HTC Dream, and the new Magic?
Quite clearly, there's a fundamental differences between the Magic and the Dream. One is very simple. Keyboard, a hardware keyboard on the Dream, and then with the Magic, it's a touch keyboard, mm-hmm. a touchscreen device. That's quite the fundamental differences. So what we've got is the Magic is now an addition to the family.
Yeah. So you'll still be able to buy the Dream.
Yeah, definitely. Still be able to buy the Dream.
And the Dream is from Optus.
That's correct.
And the Magic is with...
So the Magic is going to be available with Three and Vodafone.
And there are slight differences between the 3 and the Vodafone versions.
That's correct. There's actually two different variances that we have available in the market. So we have the HTC Magic available with 3 and the HTC Magic with Google available with Vodafone. And the slight differences are quite simple. They only are slight differences. The core functionalities are basically the same. But if we look at the Vodafone one, the Vodafone one has the ability to get all the firmware updates over the air. Whereas with the Magic, the HTC Magic with 3, that'll be, if you want an update, a firmware update, you'll need to do it via your PC.
And what's the reasons for the differences between them?
With the Vodafone one, that's actually a three-way partnership between Google and Vodafone and HTC. And basically, the Google can develop the operating system for that one and on all the applications and the features and functionalities. And that was done with Vodafone. Whereas with the 3 version, that is between HTC and also with 3. And basically, the applications and functionality are developed jointly together between those two parties.
Okay. And so it's an 850, it runs at the 850 megahertz frequency, so you could use it with Telstra, but you won't get the next G speeds, is that right?
Yeah, 850 is for the GSM side, okay, so that is what we call 2G.
Yeah.
Okay. In the 3G operating, the frequencies is actually 900, 2100.
Yeah.
So it'll work with the operators, all the operators on 2100, which is generally metro area. If you want regional coverage, then that is generally either with the next G, say 850, or with the Telstra, with Vodafone and Optus, they're 900.
So if you put a Next G SIM card into it, would you get the Next G coverage footprint, but just not the Next G speeds?
You wouldn't get the Next G footprint, okay? Mm-hmm. You would get it in 2G, okay?
So would it be Edge or just GSM?
Yeah, probably just Edge, yeah. And then you would get in metro area, you get the 3G performance,
I noticed just looking at the spec sheets, there's tiny little differences, like a few differences in a few grams of weight and the different processor numbers. Are they the same under the bonnet?
Yeah, basically they are the same board, just a slight little tweak in the performance of the processor.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with a slight tweak in the processor, there's a slight difference in the weight.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've heard, listeners would know, Dr. Ron's got a HTC Dream and he's not always happy with the battery life. What advice would you have for him?
So Dr. Ron, what you need to do is download one of the applications from the marketplace, the Android market. It's battery monitor. There's probably about 10 different applications I've seen there, and it allows you to monitor what the applications or functions such as the compass or the GPS that are using the battery, and you can turn some of those functions off, and that will help you monitor the battery and get better improvement. The second thing which is going to improve the performance is that when the 1.5 version is available for Dream, which we expect to be in the next couple of months or even in a shorter period of time, that will also improve your battery performance as well.
So you said that the battery life is generally a bit better on the Magic. That's mostly due to the fact that it's running 1.5?
Yeah, due to 1.5, slightly a bit bigger battery. Mainly due to 1.5. I'm been using my phone. I'm a heavy voice user, and voice is actually one of the heavy uses of it. And I've got my push mail running on it as well, and I'm getting a full day out of it.
And Google Latitude comes pre-installed on this?
Yeah, that's correct. With the Google Maps, they've got the Latitude functionality in there. And for people who don't know what Latitude is, it's a permission-based, I'm going to make that clear, so you can control, but it's permission-based ability for you to see where your friends are.
Yeah, and for them to see where you are.
Correct,
if you want them. So the permissions are only one-on-one. You can't create a group of, we'll say, 10 people and say, right, I want everyone in this group to be able to see me.
That's correct. Yeah. At the moment, it's just on a one-to-one basis, and I think that's quite good because then you, as an individual user, have that power of whether you want that to do, and that is really what we all want and need.
So you said that if you want someone else to be able to see you, they need a Google account as well, a Gmail account.
Correct.
Will it work with Google Apps? Like if they've got Google Apps for Business or something, so it's not a Gmail account, but it's a Google-powered email address.
Yeah.
Well, do you know if Latitude works with that?
Not sure, actually. Yeah. I think that's probably one thing we would probably check with Google App for you.
I get my review in, I'll check that out.
Yeah.
One of the things I notice is it still doesn't have the pinch-to-zoom functionality on the browser, and I know that's an ongoing thing
with Apple. Is that something we're likely to ever see added?
Well, the Zoom, how we do the Zoom is literally you touch the screen and you can zoom in and out and pan around. I personally don't know if that's something that's locked down to Apple or not, but that's the way we're addressing and how we provide the Zoom functionality.
And so what else should we expect from HTC later this year?
Some very exciting products, Adam. And the expansion of our Windows mobile platforms, okay? And some of the products have already been announced. We'll see some of those products coming available in Australia. Mm-hmm. And an expansion of our Android platforms as well.
So we should expect to see more Android phones
definitely
this year from HTC.
Yes, you'll definitely see some more Android handsets from HTC this year.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for your time.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
During that segment, Dr. Ron has furiously been playing around on 27%. Is that what the score for Adam's segment, or how much battery life you've got left?
That's I installed.
That's how much battery life is taken by the compass. No.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Gee whiz.
How much battery life is taken by the battery monitor app?
I think that's what it is. 27% of.
So don't get me wrong. You've downloaded that app he was talking about.
Yeah,
and it's
just, well, I've downloaded one of them.
You probably said on the webcam for those watching live, is there's a big black screen on his phone now with the number 27 and a percentage sign after it.
Yeah, yeah.
That all sounded really good. But I got a question for Dr. Ron. I used to have a HTC device, the old iMate.
Yes,
and I always kept on breaking belt clips and pins and things, and I'd go into the iMate maintenance depot to get things fixed. And it would take them, in fact, it would take them more than months. They just never responded to any problems. Have they got any better? Have you accessed them at all?
I haven't had need to access them, no.
I wonder if they've got better.
I don't know. There's a lot of applications in the markets here concerning battery and battery life. This one that I've just downloaded called My Battery Status All seems to do is just display a big figure with a percent sign after it.
I wouldn't have thought too, as was alluded to in that report, the voice traffic would really slug your battery too much these days, because I would have thought with the Bluetooth enabled, GPS stuff enabled, and all the regular datary things like email and stuff, I would have thought that would have churned through batteries faster than voice.
Yeah, I think so. And if you leave Wi-Fi turned on and Bluetooth turned on, and you've got latitude running, and you've
running
got
all the time.
Skype turned on and logged in. Presumably, they were running all
well,
the time.
Well, that's me, so. And I get a lot more than a day out of my handset.
Would have thought so.
So, anyway, so you got what, 1.5 to look forward to? So, if you're looking at getting a Dream, at the moment, I think they're only available through one carrier. You got yours from...
No, I bought mine outright from a store in town.
Yeah.
Which you can do, and it comes with the HTC warranty.
It's just a pain in sort of plugging in all the settings for your provider, isn't it?
That's the thing. You've got to manually enter in all of the access point settings so that the SMS or texting works correctly and MMS works correctly. But I think the carrier that's offering them at the moment is Optus.
Yeah.
And that's and the
new
one. We're going to start offering.
Yeah, they're starting the new one, the Magic.
They're going to start with the Magic.
About. Magic
yeah.
and Vodafone are going to have those. Just a tip for players, if you're going to get one of these smartphones, they do take a lot to set up if you want to change carriers with all your access points and things like that. So it does pay if you're going to use it on one particular network. See if you can get it through that particular network, because it just works out of the box then. A damn sight easier. Otherwise, you know, as Dr. Ron and I, we're still fiddling with Skype on that device and still haven't managed to quite get it to work properly yet.
I did write a little blog entry a couple of days ago or a week or so ago at drron.com.au, and I was talking about two fairly recent additions to the Dream if you're using it in Australia. One is the Latitude, which we've spoken about. Google Latitude is now working and it'll automatically update on your Dream. And also, and Adam was talking about Latitude in his last view from the couch just then. Also, we've now got Skype Lite Beta available in the Android market in Australia, which is very exciting. And it works well. I was talking to Matthew last night, our Danish correspondent, for about half an hour on Skype, and I called
and the
him.
Battery went flat.
And the battery went flat. But the Skype Lite Beta was working quite well. But it's a bit strange. It uses a voice gateway in Sydney. So it uses the data network to set up the call and to monitor your status and the status of all your contacts. But when it comes to actually making the call, it uses the voice network to send your call up to Sydney and then out through a voice over IP gateway from Sydney to whoever it is you're calling.
Okay.
So, and that's how they chew up the Skype minutes if you've got Skype minutes on your phone plan.
So out of curiosity, how happy are you with the device you have these days? Would you buy one again?
Yeah. Yeah, okay, definitely. I'm definitely going to persevere with this, and I'd like to have put it side by side with the Magic, and I'd like to see what comes after the Magic.
That'd well, wait and see. Hopefully when Adam gets his demo play around copy thing device, maybe you can do that. Anyway, we'll see what happens. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Andrew McComb, Graham Callaghan, JD. Soon coming up, we'll be talking to Robert Broomhead from the Wireless Institute of Australia about ACMA and other interesting things associated with amateur radio and the hobby. In the meanwhile, boys, Bing. Not Cosby, but Bing. Microsoft's new search engine. Have any of you had had a bit of a play yet?
We've all had a bit of a play tonight, I think.
And Graham's really impressed.
Graham's, yeah.
Microsoft Google.
Yeah, what was your...
previously known as what? Live Search, previously known as...
Yes, Microsoft just keep changing the name of their search engine as far as I can
changing
tell.
The picture? Really?
And now they change the picture as well, yeah.
You're not going to give it a go? Like, yeah, you've probably only seen the picture for the first time.
Yeah, I haven't had much of a chance to play with it yet, but Google works for me. Live Search, I've never been impressed by. Why?
But maybe this is different, because I haven't had to play with it. It's only just gone online in the last little bit.
Well, and I just typed in a simple query. It gave up a list of responses. I typed the same query into Google, and the responses I got were ones I was more likely to be interested in.
It's an interesting name for a search engine, though. Bing.
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 It's a good domain name to pick up.
It is, but could you imagine registering that in all the marketplaces around the world?
Yeah, because only Bing.dk and Bing.jp and Bing.tv and
Steve
so
Ballmer.
On and so forth.
Steve Ballmer, who is the CEO, he replaced Bill Gates at the top job there in Microsoft. This will give you a bit of an indication as to what Bing is all about.
Why this name?
Well, the most important thing, actually, is why a name? But we wanted something that unambiguously said search. But I want people to say, okay, there's an alternative. I get it. It's got a clear name. It's all identified with search.
Why?
We've got new things coming.
I get it, but why that name?
No, the name is short. It's easy to say. It works globally. You have to get URL clearance. That turns out to be one of the big things these days. If you take a look at all the four-letter words in the world that you can actually pronounce, many of them are already owned as URLs someplace else.
Did you have to buy
this
from somebody?
In some countries, there were places we had to secure the rights. You got to go secure the trademark. There was some rumor of that being a problem, which is not the case. That was...
Right.
Out of context. So we had work to do.
Should we take a look?
Yeah.
You know what search engines do really well? Answer simple questions. Like, what's the capital of Botswana or the world's largest rodent? But sometimes, simple isn't enough. Sometimes you're looking for something that doesn't have just one answer, like where we should go for dinner tonight. That's why we built Bing. It's not just a search engine. It's a decision engine. Whether it's as simple as deciding which link to click on, or as involved as planning your next vacation, Bing helps you overcome search overload and find the best choice faster. We started just by organizing our results. Instead of spitting them out in order of popularity, we break them into logical categories. We bring the best match to the top, pull out information that's buried on the site, highlight instant answers, and show related searches right there on the results page. Simple, organized, and consistent. That's Bing. But where Bing really shines is in helping take the guesswork from your decisions, saving you time and money when it comes to local search, travel planning, health questions, and shopping. Looking for a digital camera? Bing brings together price comparisons, images, and reviews to help you find the best products and deals quickly. And those reviews are drawn from all over the web, sorted and grouped, so it's easy to zero in on what you care about most. Even better, Bing gets you cash back from hundreds of online retailers. Now, the internet can be a little sketchy when you've got health questions. How do you find a source you can trust? Well, Bing's health results pull together information from the top medical sources in the world, including the Mayo Clinic, so you can feel confident you're not taking the advice of, say, a 13-year-old boy. And when it comes to travel decisions, Bing helps you have the confidence that you're getting the most for your time and money. Enter your dates, and Bing searches travel sites and airlines to find the best ticket options. Gives you the tools to refine your results, and its price predictor is even smart enough to tell you when the fares will be cheapest. And say you want to do a local search in New York for a French restaurant. Bing lets you refine your results by parking, price, even reservations or atmosphere. Here too, reviews from around the web, hours, and one-click directions are all on one page. Try it. See how Bing can save you time and money and help you find just what you're looking for faster, easier, and with more confidence. Because the world doesn't need just another search engine. It needs a decision engine.
There's been a couple of interesting acronyms out there already for Bing. Our listeners are very clever, aren't they?
Warlock says Bing stands for Bing is not Google, a recursive acronym.
We thought we said Google, but we didn't. It's very hard not to use search engine and Google not without the same sentence.
Like, well, I've just had an interesting experiment. I've gone to Bing, and I've typed in search because I want to find a good search engine, and the top two results are both Google.
Well, there you go.
So I think it's solved my problem. It's found me a good search engine.
So if you click on Google, Graham, it takes you to
Google, and I can do my search.
Google search engine. Oh, it's working well.
Yeah.
I still like Wolfram Alpha. I think that's fantastic, changing the subject completely, because that is a terrific... That's not a search engine. It's a mathematical genius device, that thing. It's amazing.
It is.
I used it the other day for... after we had James on the show last week, I put in 10 to the power of 17 to find out what it was called mathematically. And it told me. I can't remember right now, but it told me. It was very good like that. The official name for what 10 to the power of 17 is.
Have you been playing around with it a little bit?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually used it for that. That was my first real task that I needed to find out that mathematical equation for the other day. But it's also interesting to plot like continents' GDP or countries' GDPs against other countries to see how they're travelling with the global financial crisis and things like that. So
we're talking about something that calls itself a computational knowledge engine, which is at Wolfram Alpha. It's Wolf, W-O-L-F-R-A-M, alpha.com.
Yeah, you spoke about it last 2 weeks ago.
A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's very interesting sort of technology that, so you can ask it questions like, what was the weather like on, September the 5th, 1945 in Berlin or something?
And it'll tell you.
Yeah, yep. Providing the database is there. It's only as good as the data that it's referencing.
But that's what Microsoft is saying that Bing's going to do, that sort of thing.
Well, the little play that I've had with it, I haven't managed to make it do anything like what they're touting at the moment.
Like what Wolfram Alpha does.
Yeah, not even that, but even like doing price comparisons. Like I plugged in a mobile phone and was going to hopefully try and find some price comparisons. Maybe it's US-centric. Maybe it does that in the US in its probably home market, but it's not doing that for me out here. Graham, have you had a bit of a tinker with any? No?
With the Wolfram, no, I haven't.
No. With the new Bing. You were playing with it before and somehow or other you ended up on Google again.
He searched for a search engine.
I searched for search.
Oh, yes. And you ended up back on Google.
It gave me Google.
Recommended Google.
Yeah, recommended Google. It did. Top result. Top two results.
So what did you type in? Recommend search. Search. Oh, just type in search. Oh, okay. Excellent. Well, there you go. That's what I guess we've got to compete with. Microsoft's last stands, I guess. Last stand against Google. What else can they do? Because as Graham alluded to, or even you, Dr. Ryan, that's his fourth reincarnation.
Yeah, this is it
for Microsoft Search.
This is it. Microsoft has to. This is a do or die for Microsoft, I suspect.
Yeah, they have to. If they want to get that sort of business, they have to do something radically different.
All right. Your opinions, we'd love to hear from them. Send us an email or something like that. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Tell us if you've been tinkering with any of the search engines listed above that we've just spoken about, and especially Bing, because I think that's going to be, as you say, do or die for Microsoft. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about ACMA.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Twitter? We do. Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting.
We've now got the technology, it's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Australia's one-way technology radio show.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and sitting in front of me is Justin Dunlop, Dr. Ron, and Graham Callaghan. Sitting to the left of me, and if I don't know if you're watching on the stream, but I think he's now on camera, is Robert Broomhead, who also has a big gig with the WIA. So we thought no one better to come in and speak to us about the state of radio in this country, both amateur and professional. And let's start off tonight with the news, Robert, that ACMA are closing a few offices. What light can you shed on this?
Yeah, one of our members was actually listening to ABC Radio and heard the approved committee hearing and noticed some information coming forth about ACMA closing its office. So we had a listen. We downloaded the notes from that approved Senate committee hearing, and sure enough, there it was. They're planning on closing Adelaide and Perth field offices.
Now, ACMA have probably been in the news for reasons which are probably more familiar with listeners, such as Stephen Conroy's blacklist and things like that, and they have a lot to do with broadcasting regulations, but they also play a major role in looking after the radio spectrum in this country, don't they?
That's right. And that's what the field officers, in fact, were looking after. It's the... I'm not sure whether your listeners are familiar, but ACMA actually have services for radio interference investigation, and those field officers, they were the offices where the people who performed that particular function operated from.
So what happens now if we've got Perth and other regional centres, or like city centres, I guess, too? What was it, Brisbane, was it? Or Adelaide, did you mention before?
Yeah, Adelaide and Perth are the ones
that are closing. So that's two western sort of towns, not on the main eastern seaboard of Australia. What happens if there's interference, do you think?
Well, they still do have offices in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane.
It's a long drive to Perth.
Well, I think if you read the report, what they're saying is they're going to fly people to Perth to do the interference investigation.
It'd be interesting to see what happens there, because I think radio interference in an essential service, and there's a lot of guys in the room here that have experience in those sort of communications field, they're probably going to be a little bit upset if someone does some harmful interference to a service, whether it's either intentionally or unintentionally. And this is what these guys used to do. They used to go and sort out the problems, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. If there was a, an interference to a broadcast station or maybe a police fire, any essential services, any interference to that, as well as, of course, TV and amateur and other services.
Yeah, because it's pretty easy to get things like, even like roller door openers. If someone gets one of those stuck on in the cars, that can radiate all sorts of strange things that you never know where might cause a bit of grief.
Yeah.
Whether it's someone's telly or whether it's some other vital, a link or something like that, because... Yeah. Like even radio stations where we are right now, they have a low-powered link which goes to their main transmitter, and if you get a bit of interference in that, well, goodness knows what might happen.
That's right. And even if your main transmitter for a community station or any station for that matter, if it developed a fault that perhaps the technicians weren't aware of, it could actually be generating spurious interference to other and causing interference to other services on other frequencies.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by the sort of accidental interference. Yeah, you just don't know that you're covering that until someone complains and says, hey, I can't land my aeroplane because I can't hear the control tower. What's going on?
And
that's a fairly extreme sort of argument, but at the end of the day, that's really what these guys used to come and sort out, really, wasn't it?
It's an extreme argument, but it is a very... it's a real argument. That's the most vital services, I guess, that they were providing were for... to ensure that the communication links worked for our emergency services and our essential services.
I remember back in the good old days, I guess when there was a lot more, I guess there still is a lot of activity in amateur radio up in high frequencies, but I used to remember the stories about Melbourne Airport and radar being interfered with in a lot of circumstances with some people who were experimenting around up there, inadvertently, of course, and it was ACMA who actually drew everyone's attention to the fact that there might have been something not quite right in their transmitter.
Yes. And that was, I'm not sure how much we can say on here, but yes, there were some situations.
But that's the example, isn't it? That's what they do, and they're closing down in a few places around Australia. Yeah.
So, Rob, in their discussions, have they given any indication about response performance? So, is it going to be 6 hours before they can get to Perth to investigate a problem, or 10 hours, or 24 hours?
Well...
Or is that the big question?
I guess that's the question. Mm. The indications have been that they're going to fly people to Perth with a laptop and sort out the interference problems. But, gosh, I wouldn't want that to be flying to Perth if there was a problem with the air navigation system.
No, absolutely. On our chat room, ask Rob if he's heard rumours of wholesale closing of radio mic frequencies and moving the lot to 800 megs. This is another interesting area, isn't it? Because that's radio mics. They're TV people use them, radio people use them.
Yeah, that's right.
They could cause a bit of interference just by turning them on.
Well, when digital television was introduced into Australia, the VHF wireless microphone bands needed to be vacated to provide the spectrum needed to operate digital TV here in Australia. So the professional audio industry has already had one shift with its wireless microphone technology.
Yeah, they originally started in a mobile phone band, didn't they? From recollection, weren't they up around 900 and they've moved down a bit or something?
I think they were a little bit lower than that, but close.
Yeah, because I know having worked in the industry, there's nothing worse than when you're recording something and you can hear some crackly thing come through in your radio mics. So anyway, that's just the nature of the beast, really. You have to move or do something else. Harmful interference. Now, tell us a little bit about amateur radio at the moment too, Rob. It's obviously thriving at the moment. I've heard lots of good stories. There's lots more people getting on the air.
It is. Every year, and it's been, a couple of years now since I've been on your show, but and if that's the case, if it was a couple of years ago, then now we've perhaps got about 1,000 more people in the hobby of amateur radio today than when I last appeared on the show.
Now, this is to do with a foundation license because this is new. This has only been one of the more recent changes to amateur radio, hasn't it?
It was something that was introduced a few years ago, and it really has provided the shot in the arm that this hobby needed. It's provided an opportunity for people to get into the hobby at an entry level. It's easy to obtain. There are radio clubs and schools that are running training courses over a weekend, so you simply you book yourself in. The Saturday we provide the training, and on the Sunday there's what we call assessments. They're like exams and tests that you do, and if you're and if you've listened to information we were teaching you on the we were being taught on the Saturday, then on the Sunday you'll be able to pass your assessment and get yourself an amateur license and get up
all
on
in the
air.
Space of a weekend.
All in the weekend.
Geez, winter, I think we should all be doing that. Well, some of us already got our licences, but yeah, no, that's pretty good.
It's become very popular. There's a school in Sherbrooke, and I perhaps could make special mention of this school because the school has endorsed the hobby. One of the teachers, Edward, picked up his amateur licence and decided to share some of his passion for the hobby with the kids at the school. And there are a number of kids that said, well, we'd like to do that. So they went and did the training course and got their license. And I think there's about 9 kids now in the school, plus 2 or 3 teachers. And they've got an active program with a radio club in the school, an active program of encouraging others in the school and other schools to join in and participate in the hobby.
Fantastic.
Now, it's probably the only person in the room here today that hasn't ever had an amateur license.
You've got no excuse now, Justin.
I don't do it. No. Now, can you go through, what sorts of things do we need to do in the course? What's required now to get a basic license?
The course is this new foundation license. Let me explain. There are 3 grades of license. The foundation license, which is the entry-level license, can be learn everything you need to know about that over a weekend. There's what's called standard, which is a bit harder, and advanced, which is the one that allows you to use full power and all of the microwave bands and that. Come back to foundation. It's an entry-level license. We're teaching you how to operate. We teach you about the equipment and how to operate the equipment safely. We teach you about the radio bands that you can transmit on. We teach you how to actually use your transmitter on the air. So it's an operating license. But it's a great first step into the hobby. And it's easily obtainable.
So do I need any technical knowledge before I come along? Do I need to know how to solder things together or...?
No, you don't actually need to know anything in particular. We've had a huge spectrum of people coming into the hobby, those with an electronics and technical interest background, and also everything through to people who have perhaps not even had an awful lot to do with radio electronics before. People are interested in four-wheel driving, boating. These people that have got other hobbies that the hobby of amateur radio, the communication aspect, can supplement that hobby and improve the enjoyment that they get out of their primary hobby.
So if I was to take up this hobby,
yep,
what sort of investment would I be looking at up front to get involved?
$67 is what it's going to cost you to do your assessment. The radio clubs and the groups that are around the traps, they're pretty much offering the training courses either for free or just at cost. So at cost of them running the course, maybe hiring a venue or whatever it is. But there's literally 200 plus clubs around Australia that are offering these training courses for near cost, yeah.
Robert, if I go four-wheel driving at the moment, or I go boating, or maybe horse riding, and I use CB radio, maybe I've got a CB radio in my car, or I've got a couple of those little walkie-talkies, little handheld radios. They are everywhere. Why would I use amateur radio, or why would I take the time to invest in an amateur radio license if I'm already using CB radio?
Well,
because CB radio is free, completely free. I just buy the equipment like from my local hobby shop and start using it.
And anybody can do that.
That's right, yep.
And everybody does do that. And, of course, you come up, you turn on your CB radio and we could have a conversation over the CB radio and...
But the distance would be fairly limited, usually with a CB radio, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we're limited to 5 watts of power, and there's two bands that that you're allowed to use with CB radio. There's something called the 27 megahertz HF band.
Yep.
And there's the UHF band. You've got a choice of two. With amateur radio, you've got a choice of way more than two.
There's one thing that a lot of people who have used CB will probably be familiar with, and that is that the channels fill up fast, don't they? You've got 40 channels on each of those bands, and often you click through them and you think, there's someone talking there, no, someone talking there, someone talking there. You'll start having a conversation and other people start butting in. But how many channels would you have, or equivalent channels would you have in the amateur radio service? Probably tens or hundreds of thousands.
That's right. And even, as we were mentioning before, there's radio bands. Some radio bands perform better during the day. Some perform better during the night. Some perform better if, say, you're doing four-wheel driving on slightly hilly terrain. One of the things you probably notice about your UHF CB, if you're going in some fairly hilly countryside, is it your coverage might be somewhat limited. There's different radio bands that will actually work really well in that environment.
And you learn all about this when you do the course, when you do the courses.
That's right. We teach you a little bit about what radio bands work best in what conditions.
So you get to understand why, as well as you get to use these extra bands. You get the understanding of the underlying technology.
It's an operating license, the foundation license, and we're teaching you all that you need to know to be able to get the best out of those.
And as a four-wheel driver or a hiker or someone, you might want to know how to build or carry a lightweight antenna or how to do something to make your radio work better.
That's right. One of the things that amateur radio has become very popular with is the yachties, the people who go out long-term on the water on their yachts.
Oh, yeah.
Because their marine radios, they're only allowed to use those for safety and emergency communication, so checking in and letting them know where they are on the water, etc.
It's very heavily regulated, isn't
it? Very heavily regulated. So if they want to actually pick up the microphone and have a bit of a chin wag, a bit of a chat with somebody, then they can't do that on their marine radio. They could try to do it with a CB radio, but UHF CB is not really going to cut it across those distances. So particularly with groups like that, they've really taken up the hobby and embraced that hobby. So it's not uncommon to be able to turn on your amateur radio set, even with your foundation license, turn on the 40-metre band and end up talking to someone out on a yacht sailing around the islands of New Caledonia or somewhere like that.
Now, do I remember hearing somewhere that not only does that happen, but occasionally you end up talking to somebody who might be sailing around the entire Earth?
That's right. That's right, indeed.
Up in orbit somewhere.
Yeah, okay. Let me explain what Graham's alluding to. The astronauts on the International Space Station, NASA pretty much ensure that all the astronauts that go on to the International Space Station have got amateur radio licenses. And it's part of NASA's program to give schools the opportunity to talk to the astronauts live on the International Space Station. And so NASA use the radio amateurs, the people with the licenses here on Earth, to help set up and run these on-air contacts where we go into a school. We'll set up in the school hall with some radio equipment, and at a prescribed time, the International Space Station will come up overhead. We'll track that space station with our antennas and give usually about 20 kids the opportunity to ask questions directly of the astronauts on that space station.
In real time and get an answer back straight away.
Absolutely.
That's got to be a great experience for the kids, really, in a lot of respects, isn't it? You don't get to do that every day.
No. And you just see the look on the kids' faces and it's just magic. It really is.
We're talking to Robert Broomhead from the Wireless Institute of Australia about the hobby of amateur radio in Australia as it stands, a very healthy hobby too. Just leading on from Justin's questions before, Robert, annual costs, how much is this going to cost me? Like, you're talking licenses here. We're not talking cheap stations, are we?
We're not talking mobile phone plans even.
No, exactly.
To put it into perspective.
Well, let me just think about this. A mobile phone bill, you could probably pay for your amateur radio license with 1 month's mobile phone bill.
That's a good way of putting it, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not bad.
And that's not a heavy user either.
Okay, so you've enticed me, like, there's space communications, there's four-wheel driving, there's a lot of applications for amateur radio. What else is people doing with amateur radio? Because it used to be a building thing, a hands-on hobby,
it is, yeah.
and it's traditionally gone into commercial black boxes where you buy radio, plug it into your four-wheel drive and talk and all that, but the art of getting the soldering iron out and tinkering, if you're that way inclined, obviously is still alive in amateur radio. After all, that's what it's about. What are people doing these days?
Well, we've just had a technical conference down at Gippsland, and we had a range of people presenting at that conference. And these are people who are doing, as you say, they're getting under the hood and building stuff and creating stuff, new technology. And one of the things that one of the guest speakers there, from a gentleman from Phil Harmon from Western Australia, came over to speak to us about something called a software-defined radio. Now, think of Think of a very simple circuit board with a couple of chips on it, a couple of integrated circuits, and a socket that you plug the antenna in, etc., and then a socket that you plug the computer into. Okay, that's that simple circuit board with the chips on it. That's the whole radio receiver. The rest of it is done in software.
So the actual tuning, or the instructions to the chip, which does the tuning, is done via the computer interface. And these little chippy things you're talking about, these circuit boards, does the hard yak, or the physical yak, of tuning up and down the band and listening to things.
So what you've got now is some circuit boards that have been produced that are really, really inexpensive. You know, I think maybe $300 or something like that. But what it's got is that we've got a community of software developers out there now that are actually writing software to make really, really high-performance, state-of-the-art radios. What absolutely knocked us over at the conference was that the quality of these radios and the quality of these software-defined radios is now exceeding that of the top-of-the-line commercially built traditional receivers that we can buy today. So,
watch out for the ICOMs and the Yaesus and all those guys, and all the commercial Codans for the Central Australian things. And goodness me! All right,
so when I get my license and I pay my, you said it was about the cost of one mobile phone plan for the whole year.
That's it.
Can I get
Graham? Graham needs to know this.
Yeah. Come on, Graham. Keep going.
He needs to get his license.
Get it back. Yeah. Can I get a plan to get to pay off a radio like I do with my mobile phone? I get a mobile phone when I pay my mobile phone plan.
Do you?
Yeah.
Graham, you're being facetious now.
It doesn't quite work that way.
No.
But to get your first radio doesn't have to be an expensive one, and there's plenty of people that have bought a brand new radio for maybe $100 or $200, and that'll last them for years. It's really
and that's what I was getting to. It's not just the cost of getting a license. You do have to have some equipment somewhere on the line, whether you build
that's
it or
right.
whether you, yeah. And I remember my first radio I bought from the bloke around the corner.
Yep.
Little handheld radio.
Oh, look, you can pick them up on eBay and all those auction houses, and even brand new, they're cheap. Look at the dollar, it's going skyward again, so it's coming down.
A roaring second-hand trade and third and fourth and fifth-hand trade with this sort of stuff, isn't there?
That's
People just sell it over and over again.
And there's websites dedicated to buying and selling second-hand radio equipment, and that's where a lot of our...
Well, back in the good old days, we used to trawl through the Trading Post on the on the weekend. And
remember that?
That was before eBay and online auctions.
Now we can search for it on Bing.
That's right. If you want the web address, it's www.vkham.com, and that's the website you can go to it's just a community website that you can go to.
vkham.com.
All right, well, while you guys contemplate that, we'll take a break. We're talking to Robert Broomhead from the Wireless Institute of Australia about the hobby of amateur radio and all things radio. If you have a question, you can jump on our chat room, if you like, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years with experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. Enough. It's only three words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, we're back. Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan, and our guest in this evening from the Wireless Institute of Australia is Robert Broomhead. He's telling us all about the great hobby of amateur radio, which we've all been accustomed to over the course of time, tinkering with all sorts of fun things. I remember when shuttles went across the top of home. I was tracking it on one of the many maps, you know, that maps you can get where you can see satellites and things like that go across. And I put in the space shuttle, I think it was at the time. It was Andy, who was there, our South Australian astronaut. And sure enough, across he went. And I think he was talking to a colleague that we all know, Jack Bremham. I think on the night he was actually having a chat to Jack. And yep. There he went across the sky. I looked up because it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was a low orbit. So, you know, you could see this great ball of orange go straight across the
top.
Could
you really? At 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah, 4. It was a winter's day, so it was, you know, low light in the afternoon, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, these days, when the space shuttle docks with the International Space Station, the combination of the two makes quite a big target. It does reflect quite a lot of light, so you can see it quite well.
It's good, and then you can talk to people all the way up there.
And there's a site called Heavens Above, which will help you track it and find out when to look up.
Heavens Above. Do they do satellites as well, do they?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know the address, now that you've mentioned it? Oh, there we go.
I'll find it.
Pressure's on while he does it. Let's go back to Robert. Robert, let's talk about the price of getting into some of the hobby. Yeah. Obviously, amateur radio, from my recollection, was it can be as cheap or as expensive as you want it to be.
That's right.
You've got quite a range of things you can buy and build and do and spend as much time or as little time on it as you like. But let's say we want to just chat and put something in the boat, in the four-wheel drive, in the car, something simple like that. What are we looking at?
Well, hang on. There's a website there. I'll just give you the address there, Andrew.
Oh, sorry, I've tabbed away from it.
Oh, hang on. There we are.
There's so one here, strictlyham.com.au.
Yes. Yes. Now, what's the price on that? That's a 2-meter radio, I think.
A 2-meter, which is VHF, which is in the 144 meg band.
Yep.
And that's what's, just trying to think what. They've all changed since I looked there. It's 50 watts. Now, that's pretty loud. Now,
50 watts compared with, like, with a CB radio limited to 5 watts,
yep,
I think.
That's right. Well, with your foundation license, I must point out.
You've
got to hit the low power button.
Yeah. But that's incentive for you to upgrade.
That's right. That's right. But you still get you still get twice as much power as you ever got with CB radios.
Mm, absolutely.
But it's also different characteristics of the band, which I think you were alluding to earlier. Graham, I think, was talking about it, where VHF, it goes a long way these days.
Right.
It's halfway between the characteristics of a HFCB and a UHFCB.
And a 2-meter radio, like the one you've just found there, and a couple of $100, brand spanking new, that will absolutely It'll absolutely go a mile compared to UHF-CB on the same, using it for four-wheel driving and rugged terrain, for example.
Now, these things are fairly robust too, judging by the looks, and they're built to, you know, withstand a good bash session in a four-wheel drive. You know, the dust, the dirt, the corrugations on the Gun Barrel Highway and things
like that.
Let you
into a little secret. A lot of the radio manufacturers actually manufacture commercial two-way radios for the communications industry, and they'll often produce a version of that particular product as an amateur radio.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're actually getting is something that is a lot more robust than you ever used to be able to get.
So they might have a commercial radio mass market, Robert, and then they'll take the front panel off and change a couple of little cosmetic things.
Yep.
And call it an amateur radio.
Tune it up for the amateur radio bands
and wacko.
Sell it to us as a good quality amateur radio set.
What a plan. Looking at that Strictly Ham site, at some of those photographs, some of those things look like they belong in the cockpit of a helicopter. They've got knobs and buttons and dials and meters and flashing lights.
That's it.
Well, look, it's all very exciting.
Friends with those sort of things.
Yes, that's right.
Now, you mentioned clubs. What sort of clubs are out there? Obviously, there's the Wireless Institute of Australia, which is pretty much the... How would you describe...
Is that a club, though?
Or? No, how would you describe the WIA?
Yeah, the Wireless Institute is the national body that represents all of the radio amateurs here in Australia to the likes of the ACMA, to government, etc. Underneath the Wireless Institute of Australia, you've got the radio clubs, and that's the groups of radio amateurs that are based in a regional area. The club that I'm a member of in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, we've got about 240, I think it is, members currently.
Gee, that's healthy.
Yeah, well, the hobby, as I said, has really taken off again since the introduction of the foundation license. Mm-hmm. We're just one of many clubs. There's clubs in Heal, for example, there's clubs in Healesville, in our area of Burwood, down at Frankston, Cranbourne. Of course, you know, we're just talking on this side of town. Then we've got Geelong, Ballarat, Bendigo, Shepparton, lots of radio clubs all through Australia.
Where's the most density of radio amateurs? Is Victoria pretty much still, I think, or Victoria, New South Wales, or one of
Victoria,
the two?
Victoria and New South Wales seem to be the where there's the largest number of radio amateurs, yeah.
All right, now we go to air in a lot of other stations and states around Australia. Take Queensland, for example, because we're heard on Switch in Brisbane. What's available in Brisbane? Now, that's a tricky question because you haven't prepared for that. But is Brisbane fairly active radio-wise?
Yeah, Brisbane would be our third most active state in terms of the number of radio licences that are held per state. Mm-hmm. Brisbane would probably be the third. Brisbane's obviously, or Queensland, shall we say, is a very vast state, so that there's a lot of radio clubs all the way up the seaboard, Townsville, Rockhampton, Cairns, for example, right up the coast.
So chances are, wherever you might happen to be in Australia, you're going to find a radio club to go and sort of share your interests with like-minded people.
That's right. And the good news is, because it's radio, even if you lived, say, and you're in the country and you, say, lived 50 or 100 kilometres from other radio amateurs and the radio club, you've got your radios. And one of the things that they do is have what are called club nets, and I guess that's a get-together of radio amateurs at a given time on a given night. Everybody comes up, turns on, has a bit of a chat.
So it's a bit like getting on the internet and chatting on IRC, but instead of using your keyboard and your fingers,
that's it.
You're out there having a chat. It's got to be fun, really, doesn't it?
Robert, the hobby of amateur radio and computers and the internets and things aren't mutually exclusive, are they?
No.
No, and this is something that I've often come across as being a misconception that people have.
Yep.
They say, oh, yeah, but that's been replaced by, that sort of a hobby's been, electronics, radio electronics, amateur radio. We've now got the internet instead. We've now got computers instead.
One of the things that's happened is that there's been a, how should I put it, a complement. The internet is used in a very complementary way to radio.
Yep.
For example, in my car I have a radio. And using a new kind of technology which has been released over the last couple of years called D-Star, this particular technology allows me to use my radio in the car to talk to a radio base in Melbourne on Mount Dandenong.
Yep.
And then via that radio base, the data is sent as VoIP or voice over IP across the internet.
The same as what we make telephone calls on the
right,
internet now. Okay,
right.
So, yeah.
That's it. And I can dial up any other radio base around the world, any other D-Star radio base around the world. So I might choose...
So it's all linked together using the internet and using, like, voice over IP technologies.
That's right.
When you say dial up, what do you mean by that? Like, has it got a phone number or something?
Pretty much, yeah. There's an actual number that you key into your microphone.
Okay, so the microphones have actually got a little 1 to 9 and a star and a 0 and a hash
that's
on it now.
That's
okay.
It. That's it.
Yeah.
Or if you haven't got that, there's a little device you can hold up to your microphone. Makes those same telephone sounds.
Grandma's got one of those. She uses it for the answering machine or talking to the net bank or something like that.
That's right. So if you... If your radio hasn't got one of those microphones, you can just hold that up, or you can even hold your mobile. In a lot of cases, you can hold your mobile phone up because that makes the same sounds when you dial up. And you can dial up a particular node, might be in California or San Francisco or London or somewhere like that, and actually have a conversation driving to or from work with your fellow radio amateur overseas, or Brisbane or Adelaide, Perth, wherever it is.
Got a question on the chat. What's happened to RTTY? RTTY. Now, there's something from the old days. That was like radio teletype over ham radio. Does that still happen?
The technology is still there.
That would be diehard enthusiast.
Absolutely.
Well, the old MIDI teletype machines, you know, the old mechanical things that used to go clunk, 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 clunk. A lot of the guys have probably buried them now. But
that's where the teletype has its history, though.
That's right.
Yeah, it used to be a Tono 4000 or something. I can't remember something like that in the good old days. Used to do RITI.
One of the best things that were ever invented for the amateur radio set, believe it or not, was the PC sound card, because the PC sound card is able to generate tones and to decode tones, for example, and hooked into your amateur radio set, there's lots of software written now for the PC that drives the PC sound card hooked into your radio. So if you ever wanted to do RITI or something like that, there'll be a bit of software available for your computer. You can hook it into your radio.
I remember doing that when I was a young operator, and I didn't have a PC. That was before the days when we had PCs.
Yep.
And I had my old Tandy colour computer.
Did you have a TRS-80?
I think Dr. Ron used to. Colour computer.
Yeah.
And I had the leads coming out of the sound port, and I had sewing pins into the microphone connector with alligator clip leads on to get the sound into my radio.
You nerd. Yeah, absolutely.
But it worked.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I could type over the radio. It was cool.
There's a lot more interesting things you can do with that these days, though, with the sound card hooked up to the computer.
I'm sure.
There's some software that's been written that enables you to do what's called moon bounce. And
Moon bounce?
Yeah, that's
it. Oh, my goodness.
Well,
so you can go past the space shuttle, past the space station, out to the moon, and then come back again.
That's it. And there's some software that you can use to decode signals that you can't even hear with your own ears. The software using the sound card as the audio input, the software on the computer, you can actually send messages to other people. Perhaps bounced via the moon, bounced via clouds.
They don't need an artificial satellite. You bounce your radio signal off the moon.
That's it. Well, I just said
to the other side of the world.
Yeah, I just said bounced via clouds too. Someone might be wondering how you're going to bounce radio waves off clouds. You don't. There's some other guys experimenting with bouncing light beams off clouds, but that's another story for another day.
You can bounce them off 747s between Melbourne and Sydney. Settle. Sorry.
A couple of guys in the chat room saying, nerd alert, Andrew, can you roll it in for us?
Absolutely, I would. Graham's just been called a geek, and someone's mentioned microbe in the same sentence too.
All right, so just to get back to it, foundation license, that's what we need to focus on to get into the hobby.
License, have a look on the...
If someone wants to, they've gone, this is good, this is me, I'm going to do it this weekend, what should they do right now?
Okay, go to the WIA website. The address is www.wia.org.au. Go to that website, have a look there, and get your radio license. There's a section there on the website there, where the first menu tab is get your license, and then there's lots of information there about the hobby itself. And the second menu tab along is your radio license. You'll find a tab under that called Foundation License, and that gives you...
There is the first option, under MRA Foundation License.
That's the one, and that'll give you the information on what radio band you can use, what power you can use, how far you can go. There's some good examples there. There's a book that you can purchase if you go to one of the other tabs on the menu, and it's called Your Entry into Amateur Radio. That book tells you everything you need to know to be able to get your foundation license. There's no questions in the exam syllabus that are not covered in that book. So
fantastic.
It's a pretty easy to read book.
Robert, thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about everything from ACMA through to amateur radio. I think it's a thriving hobby at the moment. I'm inspired. Might have to get out there and do some stuff again. But if anyone else is inspired, hit the website, wa.org.au, and follow the appropriate links that Robert's just talked us through. Thank you very much for coming in this evening.
Thanks for having me on the show.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're coming up to that part of the show, Oddspot Gadget Website of the Week. And, stick with us, and we'll be back, and we'll do all that just after this.
Suffer and suck it out. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
Do you block them, do you?
I do.
This is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffany, techie, propellerhead, geeky.
Independent.
The SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The flop that is Microsoft Zune, which you can't even buy here.
Oh yeah, that was on our list last week, wasn't it?
It was. It's being superseded by Microsoft Zune HD. Steve Ballmer has demoed the Zune HD for popular gadget site Engadget. Officially announced on 26th of May, and at this stage set for a September 5 launch. The Zune HD features a big 3.3 OLED screen. And the review, they say the OLED screen looks absolutely stunning, even at severe viewing angles. Colours were super bright, edges were crisp, and text looked beautiful. There's a big button below the screen, presumably like a multi-function power or navigation button. And Engadget reported that the user interface was basically the same as the existing Zune UI, but with touch navigation. And it featured a music player, HD radio receiver this time.
Oh, wow.
HD video outs to support 720p HD movies through the Zune HD and AV dock. Sold separately, built-in web browser, built-in accelerometer, and touch screen QWERTY keyboard.
Well, you mentioned it as Gadget of the Week, but you also said in the same sentence that it wasn't available here last time. Is this one going to be available here?
We still don't know. We haven't heard. There are more details at engadget.com and zune.net. So that's our Gadget of the Week, the Zune HD.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
I thought we had to make it bing.com because we've given it so much attention this week. B-I-N-G.
Yeah.
Bing is not Google.
No, it's not. Bing is not Google.
It's
very good.
That's recursive.
Very good, whoever suggested that out there in the chat room that night. Yeah.
There we go. That's the search engine we've been ranting and raving about. Try it out.
Ranting.
See, well, ranting anyway, yes, more than raving. But see what you think. Give us some feedback if you find it useful or if you're going to stick to tried and true search engine that you're used to.
Bing.com, not available on an iPhone that JD had this evening. I don't know why. We got live, didn't we?
M.live, yeah.
Okay. So Bing is our website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much. I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
The infamous...
Don't leave pauses like that.
1,645-pound floating duck island, which has claimed the political scalp of a British MP...
Oh, I've seen
in
this.
...in the widening expenses row, is visible for the world to see on satellite images hosted on Google Maps.
Of course it is.
Google Earth and Microsoft's Live Search Maps. Conservative MP Sir Peter Vigors bought the wooden structure for the pond at his home.
What's this got to do with technology, apart from the fact you can see it on... I'm just
curious.
Well,
you can now see it, if you want to see what it looks like, on Google Maps, Google Earth, or Live Search Maps.
So did he deny it all the way, and then all of a sudden people said, but you can see it.
Sir Peter's estate is clearly visible on the satellite aerial view. The clearest image can be seen, apparently, on Microsoft Live Search Maps service, which gives a detailed bird's eye view of the property. Oh, dear, the pond and the duck island. The House of Commons has been rocked recently by leaked documents published in The Telegraph over 2 weeks, showing how MPs spent or waste public money on everything from food and drink to tennis court repairs and moat cleaning. The Duck Island is almost 1.5 metres high and is designed to provide protection for the birds from foxes and other predators.
Fantastic.
It's based on an 18th century building reconstructed at Skansen, the Stockholm Museum of Buildings. That's our odd spot.
Excellent. And that is Tech Talk Radio for this week. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Justin Dunlop. Thank you very much for coming in. Also, thank you very much to Robert Broomhead from the Wireless Institute of Australia to tell us all about the goings-on and wonderful things that we've got to look forward to in the foundation license. Graham, you going to go and renew?
I'm going to try.
You're going to try? Excellent. We can do it all online now, apparently, so that'd be good. All right, until the same time next week. Also, we were going to talk about Google's algorithm for spotting quitters before they resign, but once again, we're going to have to hold it over to next week. All right, until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.